I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Oak Creek Mayor Steve Scafidi is with us this hour of the program. His book, 6 Minutes in August, A Story of Tragedy, Healing, and Community, has just been published, and he reflects on August 5th, 2012, the day of the Sikh temple shootings in Oak Creek. Wade Michael Page, for those of you who may not be familiar with this story, a white supremacist killed 4 members of the temple inside the building and 2 outside. And Steve was a newly elected mayor, and a little, well, how could anybody be prepared for the events of that day? It has taken him to friendships within that community and, of course, to Washington, D.C., as we as a country deal with violence in the country and what we do about this kind of violence. So he's met with the president and the vice president and mayors and with people who have experienced in other communities in this country similar kinds of gun violence from Aurora, Colorado and Newtown and other places. We'll be welcoming phone calls for the mayor after we chat for a while. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter at K Dunn Show. Mayor Scafidi, thank you very much for being with us in our studios today. Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. I'm glad you wrote this because it carries us on, as this story does, the enormity of the tragedy, but also all that's happened since then and how you have been personally changed as a result of this. It was an experience, I can tell, that transformed you.
I mean, it's an event that changes your life. You can't witness and experience all the things that happened as a result of the shooting and all the events that took place that day and the many days after that without having it change you. And to meet the people that I met, the tremendous members of the temple who kind of walked us through the response and what we needed to do, to the local and state and federal leaders that jumped in to help us, all of those experiences defined how we are looked at and how I'm looked at. And I learned a lot during those, you know, the 3 years plus since, and I continue to learn every day.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. What a thing to walk into. You were a newly elected mayor, and you dramatically talk about when you first heard this news, and with an event like this, you don't know exactly what's going on. You have to piece together bits of information.
It was stunning. That day was a regular summer day. That summer was actually gorgeous. I was actually on my way to a garden. I have a large garden in Oak Creek. And I get a call from the fire chief, followed up by a call from the police chief that there's a shooting, and then Brian Murphy is the identified officer as being seriously wounded. Took my breath away. Spent the majority of that day on scene dealing with the things you would deal with, not really in the safe public safety side, but just assisting where I could assist. But a couple things happened that kind of got me through that day. Late in the day, after I had returned to City Hall, I got a call from the President of the United States. And again, totally unexpected, not something you would ever expect to get 4 months in office. But I got great advice in a phone call from Aurora Mayor Steve Hogan, who had just had his shooting about 10 days prior. Mm. He took it upon himself to call me and say, I know what you're dealing with. I know you're a new mayor. These are some of the things. And he said, don't talk about what you know. Be calm and reassure your community. And those things guided my response. And even though I was as far away from as calm as you could be, those words helped me kind of deal with it, at least in the early days.
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you're dealing with a whole new community, too. The Sikh temple, and all of us were. We didn't know anything about the Sikh faith. We didn't know the individuals. And what was interesting to me as a journalist during those times is the way that they would come into our studio, and even though they experienced this great tragedy, there was something accepting, beautiful about so many of the people I met in that community. And I know that you've been there many, many times since, and that probably has transformed you as well.
Yeah, I've learned so much from that community. One of the reasons, again, that we're looked at in a positive way is because of the way they dealt with us. Mm-hmm. They didn't reacted with vengeance or anger. They were really concerned with how we were doing and how the community was doing. They put aside their own grief, not that they didn't have it, because they had tremendous amounts of grief and sadness and just anger, but they put that aside and said, how can we help our community heal? That was the number one thing they did the next day when we met with a number of their members in the Salvation Army in Oak Creek, right down the street from the temple. They asked how can we mend the community, and because of that leadership, we're looked upon in a better way. We were able to handle some of the things that were happening. And it was a very quick, accelerated pace of response that first week. So many things happening, you know, network coverage. I think the chief and I did hundreds and hundreds of interviews.
I'm sure you did.
And we weren't prepared, and I wasn't prepared, because I had certainly communicated in a lot of different positions in my life, but not in that sense, not in the sense of a mass shooting. So I learned as I went. But I took that advice that I got, and I kind of went slow, and that helped.
Plus, you were dealing with victims. Almost everybody in that temple has family member in India, so you're dealing with this international aspect, and translators and people who didn't speak English and people from India who were coming here. All of a sudden, it's a very large cultural thing to understand as well, right?
Right. I mean, what we benefited from was the younger members of the temple. Many of them had grown up in Oak Creek, and they were bilingual. They could speak Punjabi and English very well. So they acted as our liaisons between this temple community who couldn't speak English and everybody else, and they certainly guided our response as well. We had lots of logistical things we had to work out. We had family members that had to get back for the funeral, which was the Friday after, right after the event. So we had tremendous help from the U.S. Department of Justice, the State Department in Washington, the President's Office, Department of Intergovernmental Affairs in Washington. All of those agencies helped us do that. But, it was a struggle, and we continue to see issues. There are still immigration issues that are still undecided to this day because of that, that distance.
Mm-hmm. One of the young men who came in, his father was killed, and I can't remember his name, but you talk about him in the book. He was 15 years old, came to the United States for his father's funeral, hadn't seen his father in a long time, although his father was expected to go back to India. He spoke at the one-year vigil, and man, he made me sob. He was, oh my gosh, I'll never forget that night. But you talk about him, and it indicates how strong that community can be and how he was affected by this. Please tell his story.
Yeah, that's Gurvinder Singh, and he... His story is really a tragic one. He had really only known his father through Skyping conversations between India and the U.S. where Gurvinder was, and he had been here hoping to go back to see his father, obviously, a couple months after the shooting. So he didn't really know his father personally as an adult. So he dealt with a lot of stress from that and just emotional baggage that he didn't have that connection, right? He didn't have that personal connection. So a lot of folks at the temple and even in the city hall and the community kind of have adopted him. Mm. It doesn't make it any easier for him, certainly, and I'm sure he has his struggles, but he was one of those people that you couldn't help but want to help. And I still see him to this day. He always says hi to me. He always wants to take a picture. He's just one example of the tremendous people that I met in this thing, and there's many others. But the young people in the temple were essential in our response as well, and because of their leadership, even at a young age, we looked good, and we were perceived in that way. We didn't do everything right, but we tried to do the right thing, and I think that's the distinction.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the press, because that must have been, all of a sudden you're asked to appear, and you've got international press descending on Oak Creek from all over the world.
It was overwhelming.
I'll bet it was.
We had to, cities like Oak Creek typically don't have public information officers full-time, but we do have people that are trained and designated, and Doug Seymour, who was traditionally our Director of Community Planning and Development, stepped into that role. Literally, it was a nonstop lineup of interviews. At some points, we were doing 7 to 8 interviews in an hour, back to back to back to back. Coordinating that was tremendous. We were moving around quite a bit. There was really no time to relax or catch your breath. Again, I took those words from Mayor Hogan that I only talked about what I knew, and the chief did the same thing. So we really had a great partnership. The chief and I have been friends for 40-plus years. That's another distinction that makes us different. We have the understanding of each other's strengths and weaknesses. I let him talk about the police side, and I certainly talked about the city side and tried to represent the temple as their wishes as good as I could. But we managed it, but it wasn't easy, and it was a stressful time. The first couple of weeks were really, really busy and not a lot of sleep, lots of coffee. I can still remember rolling up to the police station the next morning, and it's just a sea of satellite trucks as far as you could see. And we were literally doing network interviews at 5 a.m. with George Stephanopoulos, to all the other networks, back to back. It was, I'll never forget that day.
Mm-hmm. So when did you get the information that the man who killed these people was a white supremacist?
Fairly soon, probably late in the day, Monday. I don't know that it was public until Tuesday, but it was pretty quick. Once Monday came around and going forward for the next few weeks, we had daily FBI briefings and local law enforcement briefings. So we knew his story. I mean, I think the chaos of the first day was there was still some unknown there. You know, there was some lots of talk about there might be another person. There was a 1.5 mile area around the temple that was swept by law enforcement to make sure that there was no one around there. But there was images that were shot of what happens traditionally in scenes like this is people go to the scene, and there were some people that frankly looked like they may be sympathetic to his cause, so they had to be checked out. So it was pretty scary for a while.
Yeah, and that throws a whole new level into this to find out that the guy is a white supremacist who probably thought they were Muslims, and God knows what he was thinking when he did this horrendous act. But all of a sudden it becomes, I mean, shooting is horrible. Now there's another level involved, that it becomes a hate crime, that it becomes, would you agree with what Eric Holder said, an act of terrorism?
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind, even though you'll never know the motives of someone that's been killed or died as a result of what happened, there's no question in my mind that it was a hate crime. When you talk about the fact that the shooter lived in Cudahy, which is probably about 6 or 7 miles from where the temple is, he passed several other churches along the way. I think there's 3 or 4. There was something about the temple that drew him, and I would say that your reference to Muslims may have been that, you know, we'll never know that, but certainly they looked differently and they spoke differently, and whether he had an interaction previously or just something, you know, pushed him over the edge that day, we'll never know. But certainly there was something about the temple and their community that triggered this, and I'll always look at it as a hate crime.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the phone call that you got. I thought it was interesting that it kept showing up on your cell phone, block call. You didn't answer the phone, and here it's the president's office calling you. Does the federal government become involved immediately? Was the FBI on planes and here to help you and help law enforcement with all of this?
Absolutely. Really? I mean, the chief talks about the tremendous influx of all of the agencies, and FBI was on scene very quickly. The president, to his credit, threw everything he could at this problem. So all of the federal agencies that mattered or were relevant were there immediately. And not just them, even the Sikh Coalition, the SALDEF, all the organizations that represent that community were also on the ground the next day, because we needed that education. Because my only knowledge of the Sikhs, of our community, was the fact that they had built a temple in Oak Creek. As a citizen and as an alderman, I was aware of them, but I had never been to the temple. I'd never driven up that long driveway that leads up to the temple. I maybe saw them in a food store or somewhere in the city, but that was it. And it is one of the largest temples in the state, so they have a presence. Nowadays, obviously, it's much different, but before that, I didn't have a great knowledge of the community. I do now.
Nobody did, really.
Very Not really, people no. Did. No, they. Yeah, I would never say anything negative about the Sikh community, but at the time they probably didn't meld as much as they would now. They're very active in our community now. Members of the temple serve in committees and commissions on the city.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I actually pointed Belhair Dalai, who stood next to me on the stage at the vigil. I pointed him to the Community Development Association because he's a businessman and he had 35 years of residency in Oak Creek. He helped me, and I thought it was a great way to bring them in. And since then, they've never looked back. They're very involved in community events. Yeah,
oh,
they've really stepped it up. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. He literally held you up, didn't he?
He did.
During a vigil.
As I was on the stage, and again, I'm looking out this sea of thousands and thousands of people, and the emotion and the sadness of it, as I hear the stories of each of the victims, the 6 victims, told by their family members, it was a very emotional time, and I was about ready to lose it, and Belhair Dalai was standing right next to me, and he put his arm around me, because he knew that I was ready to drop. And I've never forgot that. I actually saw him this morning at a CDA meeting in Oak Creek.
Oh.
I always thank him for that. He's a tremendous human being. And again, his leadership that night and his help and just being a friend to someone that he didn't know. He never knew me. He knew of me, but not me personally. His help is something that I'll never forget, and that's why I put that in the book. I think it's a great story of how people can help each other,
yeah,
even that don't know each other.
And you were given, tell me about how high an honor this is, a saffron robe.
Yeah, they give you the orange robe in a special ceremony. The chief and I got ours in the same day, and they put it on your shoulders, and it's the highest honor, and it basically says that you've stepped up for their community, and I still have it. It's in my office at City Hall. I'll never let that go. At the event, they tell you why they think you earn it. And really, I was just doing my job. And I think what one of the reasons that they perceive me that way is because I stayed involved with them. I didn't, you know, a lot of times politicians, I like to call myself an elected official, not a politician, for all the obvious reasons, but they get involved and then they step away. Mm-hmm. Well, they asked us to stay involved, and that's something that we've done, both the chief and I. We talk about this event. We present on some of the specifics. John Edwards on the police side and myself on the city response side, because I think it's a message that's important given what's happening today, how cities deal with this, but really what cities that haven't had to deal with this, how you can mend your community before maybe it gets to this point. Because really this is about people not understanding each other and then trying to hate each other because they don't understand what that person's about.
Mm-hmm. You had a vigil. It was on National Night Out, an event that was planned. I bet there were some jitters about whether or not you wanted to have this large vigil so closely after the shootings.
Yeah, especially in a public area like a park. There was lots of concern, but it was really important to the community. And originally, I was not a big fan of the idea, nor was the chief. Because you're talking about 6,000 to 7,000 people.
Goodness.
When we only barely understood what had happened that day, and we obviously the shooter was dead, but we didn't know the rest of the story really in any great detail. So we had to, there was lots of logistics to that, lots of law enforcement involved. A cool story I tell in the book is Officer Lenda, who was off duty, obviously because of what happened on August 5th, was actually in the crowd. He wanted to be there, in a plain clothes thing. But I looked over and saw Sam, and then I knew that it was all right, because if Sam was there, he would keep everybody safe. So, and that's just a tiny example of the tremendous law enforcement we have in our city. And they stepped up that day, both Brian and Sam, in the highest way possible.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about Brian Murphy, who is very badly wounded, and I'm wondering how he is today. But you also write about all the officers who've had this incredibly traumatic day, and they were at Frederick Hospital with the lieutenant, with his wife, just kind of holding their own vigil.
Yeah, we wanted to go, Chief and I wanted to go in the evening just to show our support. And as we walked into Frederick, all of the officers that were involved, that they still in uniform, were in the small waiting room outside of where Brian was, and Brian was still in surgery. They were trying to correct his trachea and his vocal cords, because that was really the challenge. Amazingly, with all the 15 wounds on him, that was the one that was most challenging, because it meant that he might not be able to speak again. He didn't have any injuries to his heart or any of the the main organ or brain other than the back of his head. So we enter this waiting room, and it's just, the emotion is absolutely incredible. And his wife Anne, God bless her, was just emotionally distraught. But everybody was there to support. So I brought my wife Kathy, was there. The chief was there, and Brian's family had come in from the East Coast. We were all gathered together, and we kind of just kind of held each other's hands and said, the good news is good. Brian will be okay. The news is really just about his throat, and if they can mend that. I see Brian fairly often. Brian speaks at a lot of events. He's still out working for the vest company that saved his life. He is a tremendous human being, probably one of the top examples of public servant that I could ever think of, to be shot that many times.
Really?
In the manner that he was attacked and nearly killed. I don't know if I tell it in the book, but the story of when he's pulled into the squad car bleeding from 15 wounds, yet he still has the control to tell the officers that he only saw one shooter, and he's controlling his breathing as he's laying in that squad car bleeding. Those are just some of the examples why Brian is a tremendous human being, and I love talking to him. I see him quite a bit, and he's doing well, which is probably the best part of it.
Mm-hmm. And you wind up going to Washington on several occasions, but there's so many of these shootings that it's just hard to take in. But you had Aurora, then you had Oak Creek, then you had Newtown. So you're going to Washington, meeting with the president and the vice president, with mayors and with people who have been affected in those other communities, to take on the issue of why this kind of violence.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was invited to Washington fairly soon. We had participated. I brought some things from the state community. They wanted to say thank you to the president. The president never came to Oak Creek. The first lady did, and we met with her at Oak Creek High School a few weeks after the shooting. But we wanted to carry some things back to the White House. So I went there first to meet them and to carry those items there. The president, the vice president, the first lady were all very gracious. And I mentioned a little bit in the book, I'm a Republican, they're Democrat. Doesn't matter in those situations to me. That's irrelevant.
Right.
What mattered to me is that the things that he told me on August 5th in the evening when he picked up the phone and called me, he did. When we asked for the help to our city, they provided it. When we asked for all of those agencies like cops and Department of Justice to come in and do things for us and to help us mend and to tell our story so that we could help other people, they did all those things. So I wanted to personally thank them. So when I went to Washington, D.C., it was to do that. There's lots of other things going on. Obviously, the president had a press conference on gun violence that was an audience member of. And I was asked to speak. I didn't speak that day in Washington, but I did some local TV. And just, I endorse things that make sense. if you can demonstrate to me that there are things that we can do to stop these things, I'm all on board. So that's my role, I think. So when I went to Washington, it was to advocate for my community, Temple community and Oak Creek, but also to talk about some of those big issues, because frankly, politicians need to be a lot braver about these things. They tend to let politics determine their responses, and that's a lazy way of being elected official.
We're going to welcome phone calls for the mayor. Oak Creek Mayor Steve Scafidi is our guest, and he is author of, just released, 6 Minutes in August, a story of tragedy, healing, and community. It deals with all that has happened in his life and with the community, and also how the country has taken on the issue of this kind of mass shooting and violence. He reflects from August 5th, 2012, the day of the Sikh temple shootings in Oak Creek, through now. He was a brand new mayor on that day and wound up writing and taking in just so much what the Sikh faith was about. He looks at compassion. He looks at having to deal with international press, with getting people here from India, with going to Washington, D.C. to speak to a large conference of Sikhs, and also to be in the same room with the president and vice president and other community people who have been affected by mass violence, shooting particularly. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. And Mayor, the news out of, we were talking about this before we went on the show, it is so omnipresent in our society, it's unbelievable. San Diego of an active shooter. The San Diego Union Tribune reports a man in a Bankers Hill apartment shot at a San Diego police officer as they answered a domestic violence call, and later fired off sporadic bursts, prompting a SWAT action that locked down nearby streets and schools and prompted aviation officials to cancel flights at the airport.
Yeah, we're in a bad, bad cycle of mass shootings, and we're going to have to figure out some way to break that cycle.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that as we continue. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mayor Steve Scafidi is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And this book is about the shootings at the Sikh temple in Oak Creek, but we've experienced so many since then. I guess the question for all of you this hour is, what do we do about the violence? How do we stop it? What do we do, huh? 800-486-8655 is our number. Jim in Rice Lake, our first caller, Mayor. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Gus. Kathleen, and good afternoon, Mr. Mayor. I have a specific question for you. Federal Department of Justice statistics from the FBI indicate that we have over 30,000 firearm victims in this country a year, a third of which are homicides. Do you support what Governor Terry McAuliffe of Virginia calls common sense gun solutions, meaning mandatory background checks for mental health as well as criminal background, a requirement that there be a cooling off period of 48 hours before gun purchase, closing gun show loopholes? And what do you think of the Republican legislative efforts to completely stop or remove any cooling off time period in a gun purchase in this state of Wisconsin, given your experience?
Yeah, I would say yes, I do agree with Governor McAuliffe's. I don't know every specific proposal he's laid out there, but certainly background checks are something that we can't abandon them, because there are ways to get around them, or they don't always work 100%, but we certainly need to step up the efforts to make sure that that is as close to 100% as possible. When you talk about gun shows, I don't think we should be able to sell guns in this country to anybody that walks into a gun show without having a background check. I just don't think that's a smart policy. At some point, given the cycle of mass shootings in this country, we have to take some action to try to reduce that. So common sense, I think, is the right term. Obviously, we have the Second Amendment that says people have the right to own and carry weapons. But exercising that right comes with the responsibility that you're not allowing people that shouldn't have them to gain access to them. So whatever we can do to make that as hard as possible is something I'm going to support.
Anything else, Jim?
Yes. What about the Republican legislators' efforts to stop all 24-48 hour cooling off periods?
Okay.
Which I would think would be consistent with any sort of common sense approach to gun violence.
Yeah, I'm not sure what problem they were trying to fix. I think, you know, obviously, the argument would be that people should have, because of the Second Amendment, they should have immediate access to weapons. And I don't think in some cases that's correct. So I think, to me, a cooling off period is certainly an acceptable compromise.
Did you change your mind on these issues after the shooting, or have you always felt that way?
I've always felt that way.
I see.
I mean, I own two guns, I talk about that. I go pheasant hunting, I deer hunt. Those are things that I've always done since I was a little kid with my dad. But we still have to think about society as a whole and how these things come into play. And obviously there's a difference between gun hunting and owning guns and carrying guns around in society. But we have to exercise some responsibilities, like we do with everything else we do, whether it's driving a car, going up in an airplane. There are limits to things. And if we can impact that without impacting the Second Amendment, the integrity of the Second Amendment, I think we need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Jim, for your call. If you want to join our conversation, please feel free to do so, 800-486-8655. You, and I think it's interesting you did this, you were asked to speak, I can't remember, it's the oldest civil rights organization in the U.S. You were asked to speak because they wanted to honor leaders who served the Sikh community. It was a huge gathering of people. What did you talk about?
That was the SALDEF event, their national gala, which they hold every year in October in Washington, D.C., and they invited me to talk about how our community was doing. Again, they're always looking outwards, not just inwards. But so I told them one thing. I read a letter to them from Brian Murphy, who at the time was still recovering, so they were very excited to hear that. But I talked about a couple things. One of them was that I did identify the actions of our shooter as a hate crime, and that was a big deal for them. One of the other key points that I made, and that was something that was still being actively worked on, was to have the Sikhs recognized as a group that's a victim of hate crimes, because they were classified as an other group. Mm. They didn't even have their own classification under the federal registry for hate crimes. So that was something that I advocated. It got a huge ovation at the event, which was 1,000 people in Washington, D.C. on a gorgeous Saturday night in D.C. But that's the things I talked about. I established the connection. I essentially paid back the respect and kindness they showed me by talking about issues that that mattered to them. And SALDEF and the Sikh Coalition gave me the information from day two after the shooting to help me formulate those ideas and to understand that those were important to them. If you talk to any large audience, you always want to relate to the audience, and that's the way I did it when I was in Washington, D.C. that night.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to, I think it's really interesting when you were talking about the number of people in the community, the Sikh community, who have really entered the Oak Creek community in a much larger way. Is that a result of what happened? Why did they decide to be on Common Council and become more involved in Oak Creek politics?
They decided that they needed to push outward because being closed did not help them. So that was their push. And again, led by a lot of their young people, they created organizations like Serve to Unite, which educates young
people. Oh, I know that organization.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Educates young people on why diversity is important and why you need to look beyond hate and to understand that there's other people that are out there that look differently and pray differently and speak differently than you do and why that's important. So their leadership, at that young age, pushed out. And then their temple leaders, many of who are much older, they followed the example of their young people, which is an incredible thing, right? That's why in the book I say I have tremendous faith in young people, because I think even though there's lots of bullying and lots of bad things that happen in schools, young people, I think they see the blending that's happening in our culture. I think they understand why that's the issues and the problems should go away. It may not. I mean, 100 years ago, my relatives were from Sicily, and they were abused and killed and jailed and all the other bad things that can happen to immigrants. Not the same story exactly, but we have a bad track record of this in this country of dealing with people that come in.
Yeah.
And I think, to their credit, the Sikh community is trying to say, all right, this bad thing happened to us, but we want to do something positive with that, and that's what I'm trying to help them do.
Mm-hmm. As you quote Pardeep in the book, you don't fight hate with hate.
Exactly. To paraphrase Martin Luther King, those are important words. You have to respond not with an equal and violent act, but with compassion and say, I need to understand why this is happening, and to communicate and educate out in the community where these things start, where they fester. One of Pardeep's good friends is Arno McCallis, who's a former white supremacist. And the fact that these two gentlemen could get together after what happened to Pardeep.
No, it's astounding.
Is an amazing story. That's why I put a chapter in there just about those two, because that's an amazing piece, and that's why they both travel all over the place talking about this, because that really does show that there's some opportunity there.
Yeah, we had we've had them on the show. I know Pardeep pretty well, and had Arno on as well. And I asked them to speak before a group of young people, teenagers, Protestants and Catholics from Northern Ireland, when they were here a couple summers ago. And I'm got to tell you, it made a huge impact on that divided community to hear. They were, you could have heard a pin drop. They were rapt attention because their story is just incredible. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah, I've spoken with at events probably 50 times with them, and they never fail to capture the attention of the audience, regardless who the audience is.
Right.
It's a tremendous listen, and encourage other schools, groups, community groups to invite them to listen to what they have to say, because that really is that there's that push out of a message that's important.
Yeah, how true. There are other people you highlight in the book. The woman who's a filmmaker who came to Oak Creek shortly after the tragedy and documented this and put together part of that vigil that we talked about earlier in the show.
Yeah, my friend Valerie Kaur, who I met the second day, a filmmaker, an activist, a sick American whose grandfather came to California as a farmer 100 years ago. Probably one of the most inspirational people I've ever met. And she was another example of someone in the sick community putting their arm around me and saying, this is what you need to know. How can I help you get the message out? So she's one of those people, and she has told a story in many ways since. And I've gone to Washington. We spoke at the Pentagon together just to hear what the message that she had, because it was just so good. And she's a storyteller. That's how she describes herself. She's also very smart. She's a Stanford educated lawyer, probably one of the smartest young people I know. So she continues to amaze me. And from what I hear, she's writing a book based on some of these same issues, and I can't wait to read it.
Mm. Talk more about a community response and how important a community response is to tragedies like this and to all of these issues is to the national debate that we have. There's something more understandable about hearing all that's happened in Oak Creek than in going to all these panels in Washington. This is what we need to do on a national level. There's something a community can teach the country. What is it?
Sure. I mean, the Oak Creek story is really that you have to wrap yourselves around as a community the event that happened. Not be afraid of it. One of the key phrases that I made, I think the next day, was, we will not let this event define our community. That's important, because it shows that we're looking beyond what just happened. So Oak Creek is looked upon as an example of how communities should deal with mass shootings. And when I met with Vice President Biden probably 2 years ago now, he told me, and his words were, you don't have to be a big city to show leadership on this issue. And I took that to heart. And I that's why I talk about it. I was at the Muslim Community Center in Morton Grove, Illinois, a couple weeks ago, talking to a community that's frankly afraid, because they're looked upon as the enemy or a terrorist, which is frankly crazy, because they're a wonderful group of people who live in the United States, who are raising families and are working, that we have no reason to fear.
Yeah.
But yet, because of the cycle of that's and the nonsense that's out in the world, unfortunately, they're targets.
Look at all the things you're doing as a result of this. It's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing part of my life, right? I worked 28 years in media research and retired 1 week before I became mayor, and obviously the shooting happened 4 months after that. And it's just been a crazy 3+ years that I've had experiences that I never would have had because of what happened. I mean, a horrible thing that happened. So I make the best out of that. I try to educate and to, as my dad always says, do the right thing. And that I think that's my point going forward. However long I'm here, I want to try to do the right thing in those areas.
Yeah, those are good words to live by, do the right thing. Karma sends this Facebook message. It's interesting that an act meant to suppress and harm a group actually made them more active and involved and influential and more respected and accepted.
Yeah, I mean, that's the irony, right? He intended to push them aside and to make them irrelevant, but what he actually did was activated them and engaged them with our community and the broader community, because now they're national, right, or international in some cases. So what he intended with his act is exactly the opposite of what happened. Now, the message from me and from the Temple community is, don't wait for those bad things to happen. Do it now. There's some great organizations. You mentioned Serve to Unite. Milwaukee Interfaith is doing some amazing, they call them amazing faith dinners, where you bring people of different faiths together at a table in someone's home. We've done three of them in Oak Creek. And you talk about commonalities. You talk about the differences as well, but you begin to understand as a group of 12 to 14 people, you have the same issues. Your kids are irritating sometimes. You have family squabbles. You have the same economic issues and money problems. There's more commonality despite the fact that all the faces look so much different. And those things that the Milwaukee Interfaith groups are doing are amazing, and that's why Amazing Face is the right name for it. And we're going to continue to host those because it brings people together that normally don't get together. I always say this when I speak anywhere. We are a culture of people going to work, pulling into their driveway, the garage door goes down, you plop yourself in front of the TV and you watch the same channel for the rest of the evening, and then you do the same thing the next day. We have to get out of that. Not that I have anything against any channel on television, but you got to start engaging people and having conversations with people that look differently than you, because diversity is not going to go away in this country. Diversity is a good thing. I said it at the vigil. It's a good thing for a community. The experience of, and richness of all the different things that people have experienced in other places in the world and they bring here is really what the term melting pot should mean. And that's what I take forward. And that's the message I've said everywhere at every event I've been at.
Yeah. Let's go back to that vigil. That vigil just a couple days after the shooting. What did you want to do that night? What did you want to accomplish?
We wanted to tell the story of the people. Unfortunately, when people are killed in situations like this, and it, as we've talked about, it happens, it seems like every day now, or every week.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to tell their stories, so we let a family member of each of the victims tell us about them, where they were from, how old they were, who their other family members were, what they were like, so that we personalized those stories so that we could all know who these people were. And as I said, it was an incredible emotional experience. And I see the film Waking Oak Creek, is some of it is shot at that event. And that's a free video that's available from Not In Our Town nationally. And that's been shown 2,000 screenings already.
Hmm.
It captures the essence of that vigil. And you see the community members who had no connection to these victims crying, embracing each other. People from not just Oak Creek. I mean, there was 6,000 to 7,000 people. They were from a lot of different places. But just capturing that story and telling the story of those people. And again, that idea came from the young people of the temple. They thought that was the way to handle
really?
It.
Really?
Wasn't our idea. And I pushed back at this large event because of the safety issues.
Right.
They said, no, we have to do this. And because of them, people like Gurpreet Dilai and Gurmukh Manjot, who are featured in the book, they pushed that. And they told us to do that. And because of that, it was a tremendous event.
Hmm. It was interesting how people heard the news from the Sikh community, young people who had fallen away from their faith in many ways and became members of the Sikh faith after all of this. But they were there to help you and to help all these other people with language translations and with calming other people in the community and giving information and holding on to each other. All of these people kind of appeared. You knew that they would be there, but you didn't know much about them, and they were there, and they were of enormous comfort and help to so many people.
Yeah, they stepped up. They all, if anyone that reads the book, they'll see how I describe, everyone converges on the scene, right? And for those folks that weren't in the temple, they could only get so close. So they got as far as the bowling alley, the Classic Lanes, which was across the street, and they immediately went into help mode. So they made their friends from the temple comfortable, because there was a couple hundred people inside the temple when this happened. So they made those folks comfortable. They served a langar meal, which is, if you don't know, is the Sunday meal that they serve every week at the temple, where they all dine together. And visitors can come in. I've probably been there 100 times on a Sunday since the shooting. They served that meal to kind of make it seem more normal. It was not a normal scene, because you essentially had a bowling alley that was a morgue and a grief center. It was very surreal. But they tried to normalize it and make it comfortable for those folks. And I think they did a tremendous job. But I can't say enough about those people, because they've defined our story. We may have done the right thing, but they truly looked past the grief that they had and stepped up and helped in every way possible.
Yeah. We welcome phone calls if you'd like to join our conversation. The mayor of Oak Creek is with us this hour, Mayor Stephen Scafidi, and his book has just been released, 6 Minutes in August, A Story of Tragedy, Healing, and Community. If you want to join us, our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter is @KDunnShow, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tell me, Mayor, about the Oak Creek Cares, this nonprofit that was established, and what it does.
A couple years ago, Carl Miller from Miller Communications in Milwaukee, we had worked with him on some of the response to the events, and he said, you know, you should capitalize for charity on some of the things that happened. So he said, why don't you create an organization with the Greater Milwaukee Foundation that essentially raises money to fund new programs designed to stop or slow down the amounts of mass shootings in this country. So that's what we did. We set up an 8-member board. We raised a good amount of money. We're continuing to raise money. We're trying to get a certain $100,000 threshold that once we get to that threshold, all the dollars will then be distributed to qualifying programs that are unique in how they approach this problem. I'm not interested in funding things that are already funded in other ways. I want people to come up with interesting and unique ideas that may stop these things from happening. So we wanted to create that kind of an organization. The Greater Milwaukee Foundation has obviously been around forever. They're a great organization to work with. They do all the logistical and all the background stuff. I'm just here to raise money for it. I think it's important that we do this. We always, given that we're in a country with lots of resources, lots of really intelligent people, we should always look for opportunities to make improvements in our lives. And this is certainly one that is probably more relevant now than ever before, mm-hmm. given what's happening. Now, there'll be people that argue that we should just let society be society, and this is a byproduct of whatever we are. I don't think that way. Lots of smart people, lots of resources. We should be able to figure out solutions to these. So Oak Creek Cares is about that, and that's why we set it up.
Yeah. So you got the news of Newtown, which took place shortly after the Oak Creek, and you said you were in a rage.
It blew me away. I was actually on my way to my first weekend not thinking about these things, and I get a call, or I heard on the radio, and then I quickly got a call from one of the local media outlets asking me to comment on it, and I was just enraged. Given the setting, given the brutality, given how many children and teachers were killed, if I wasn't already there, it pushed me the rest of the way that said, you have to do something about this. So that was whatever push I needed to do to get there, that was it. I just was so physically upset. Here's the setting. We go up to our cabin up in western Wisconsin. Bunch of guys my age, we're typically not a place where you go for a lot of introspection and good conversation. But that night we talked about that shooting in the context of a bunch of guys that are pretty pro-gun and, you know, would push back on a lot of things that I think probably need to happen. But we had those conversations because it was so unsettling, mm-hmm. the fact that it happened in a school and mm-hmm. to, you know, little kids that were essentially slaughtered. Mm-hmm. We had that conversation because it was important to have it. And that's what's pushed me the rest of the way. I want to have we shouldn't shy away from having difficult conversations. And we do that. And it really drives me nuts when elected officials do it. Because there's no reason. If you're going to lead, don't let other people influence not doing things.
Yeah. They keep happening, though. We had Charleston, and we've had Oregon, and it doesn't even make the news. I remember being in Northern Ireland years ago, and you had to have 3 or more people shot, I recall, was the BBC policy before it made it to the radio news broadcast. It's just we're becoming numb to all this. I can't believe this is happening at the rate that it is. What in the heck is going on?
I think we're in a copycat cycle where it has to be because, I mean, we're seeing the same thing. We're seeing now there's multiple theater shootings or people walking into places of worship. We've seen it in Charleston. I wrote an op-ed on that, how tragic and sad that was that happened to a community that was just essentially reading the Bible.
I know.
We have to figure out a way to slow it down. We're never going to prevent it, probably, but we need to slow it down. And how that's done and how we figure that out is the real challenge for electeds, for residents, for constituents, whatever you want to call them. That's what we should be working on because that's what matters. Yeah. All the other stuff, not that important.
Yeah. How did you keep a sense of sanity and all of the other people who you were with who were up for day after day after day, people who had lost a loved one, people who were wondering how Lieutenant Brian Murphy was going to make it through, all these people who were in tremendous shock and grief and planning all of these events and all this press is here from all over. Just, you know, emotionally and as a human being, what did you do to... I don't know, relax or to stop thinking about it.
Yeah, I probably didn't do enough. I told the story a couple weeks ago where I saw the film, Waking in Oak Creek, about a year or so after the shooting. And I sat in my in my living room with my wife. They gave me an advance copy. Thank God they gave me an advance copy, because I literally bawled like a baby. Because I knew the people now.
Yeah.
These weren't just faces. These were families that I know very well. Some of them are good friends of mine. So it became very personal. But, you know, it could be a cliche, but family obviously is your support network, and I have a great wife and great kids, and my parents and my wife's parents, and then the community have been nothing but outstanding. They have supported me. I still get people that say, hey, thanks for all the work you do. You know, politicians get, elected officials get yelled at all the time. It's nice to hear those things, and hopefully I did the right thing. But they supported me. It was not a fun period. I mean, it was lots and lots of different things you had to do, and you're not a lot of sleep, and I'm a coffee drinker, so lots of coffee. And I still somehow remain calm despite drinking all that coffee. But just a great support network. And the other thing was our city staff stepped up in just unimaginable ways. People have roles and responsibilities in city government, in City Hall, but these people stepped up and did things outside of their job description whenever we asked them. Volunteering, I should say. Way outside their normal work hours. And events like we held, they just showed up. And that's another big part of the story.
Yeah, that warms the heart. How did you explain this to your children?
Well, my girls are grown up, so that's easier. But, you know, I say the same thing to everybody. This is an act by a person who hated somebody because of what they looked like. It's a sad lesson, really, and it's something that happens a lot. So I just told them, you know, we need to do things, and they support me 100%, and we just need to do things better as a society, and they're supportive of that, and that's all I really had to tell them as adults. I think it'd be much more difficult if they were small children.
Right.
That would have been tough. I didn't have to deal with that. But I have nieces and nephews, and they ask about it, and I certainly talk about it. I just said it was an act of hate towards somebody they didn't know.
Yeah.
Somebody just lost it, basically.
Yeah. And you chose to write a book about it because?
I needed to get it out. To get it out of me, some of the stories, and to tell the stories, which are amazing, I think. The fact that a guy from Oak Creek gets to go and talk to the President of the United States in a small room in the White House, or the Vice President on the phone or in person in Washington, D.C., those are not things that happen to mayors of towns like Oak Creek, cities like Oak Creek. But really, you know, in the course of the book, I probably interviewed 50 different people from the temple, and I wanted to tell their stories because they're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are now people in the community, because of TV, know who these people are, and they're asked to speak on a lot of things. So I wanted to tell their stories. So I wanted to talk about the event, the response, but also the recovery, because that's the Oak Creek story that really matters. We could have suffered for a long time because of what happened. If you know the Oak Creek story, and we're in the news a lot, we have never looked back. We push forward. Some of that is based on this incredible response. It didn't harm our community. It built our community and made it stronger. So we look at that lesson and we use it for everything, whether you're talking about economics or building community involvement. We take the lesson and spread it out in all those areas.
Yeah. So the young boy who came here, you mentioned telling the stories, and you do very movingly. The young boy who came here as a 15-year-old for his father's funeral wound up going to Oak Creek High School, right?
Yep, I think he's a junior or senior in high school. I see him quite a bit. You know, being a young person is probably not easy. Being a young sick is probably even a little harder than that. We're trying to mentor him as best we can, and I know he has mom who's here. It's challenging for someone, especially when you have a situation like that you're dealing with. But we continue to look out for him and encourage him. And the brothers, Kamal and Harpreet Saini, they're doing well. Their mom was killed. Premjit Kaur was killed, shot in the back in the temple while she was there. They're doing well, both in school. I know they both want to work in law enforcement, which is kind of an interesting twist on the story.
Yes.
I saw Kamal a couple weeks ago. They're doing well. So the recovery is proceeding. We still get together quite often and talk about all the things that are happening in their lives. And that's really kind of, I guess, the example is it's not talking about the shooting now. It's talking about things that are happening in our lives together because we're friends.
Isn't it? Yeah, you've got all new, you've had old friends too, but all these new friends.
Right, exactly. And that I think the example is make the effort. discover those friendships, because there's a lot of them to be had that we don't take advantage of.
Yeah. Thank you ever so much for being with us and having written the book, too. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Our guest, the mayor of Oak Creek, Stephen Scafidi. His book is 6 Minutes in August, A Story of Tragedy, Healing, and Community, which has just been published. He was elected mayor of Oak Creek just before the tragedy in August 5th of 2012, when in that Sikh House of Worship, there was active terrorism, a hate crime, and 6 people in the community were killed. It changed his life. It's changed many people's lives, and the book covers all of that and then some. So it's a good read and an event to remember. Well, thanks very much to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up momentarily from National Public Radio. We'll be with you tomorrow, first hour of the show, 2 investigative journalists who've written about a growing trend of large companies opting out of workers' compensation. And then the second hour of the program, members of the Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin who respond to a show that we had a couple weeks ago. Thanks for listening, everybody. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.